This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Mark Day. Mark is the director for the Office of Strategic Programs at the Integrated Technology Service and the Federal Acquisition Service at the General Services Administration. And Mark, I promise I'll only do that part of it, all that once. From now on, I'll be Director of Strategic Programs at the Integrated Technology Service. I promise I won't go through the whole thing. But, you know, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on, and happy belated Thanksgiving last week.
And so, you.
And with that, I just thought first, I know you've been at GSA, Freudian slip there, but been at GSA for about a year now at ITS in your position. Can you talk a little bit about your background and where you came from and how you ended up at GSA?
Sure. Well, my background is pretty varied. I most recently was CTO at HUD and was working on their major recompete of their IT support contract. Prior to that, I was CTO in the private sector for a company named McDonnell Bradley, which since sold to Mantech. And prior to that, I was deputy CIO for EPA for about 10 years. So a fairly varied background and a lot of IT experience.
Right. So, and as chief CTO, as chief technology officer.
Correct.
And CIO, chief information.
Correct.
Officer, is there any difference between those titles? Is it to depend on the company or the organization?
Well,
to
some degree, it does depend on the organization. CTOs take different flavors. Some are very technically oriented. In the private sector, I was oriented towards how do you marry the technology with the business needs of the customer. So it does depend on the organization as to what the focus is. CIO tends to be more the overall governance, the overall program management, and may have the CTO and other parts beneath it.
Right. So just sort of another question along those lines is that you are someone who has been in government, kind of the private sector, then come back to government. How has that sort of, you know, changed your perspective on things? I like to say if I had known what I know now when I was in the government, I would have done a lot of things differently. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, sure. I think that is, in fact, one of the great values of going out of the government for a while is I got to see the other side. I was fortunate enough to work with a CEO who allowed me to have a lot of access into pricing strategies, risk management strategies, and how do you actually respond to a procurement from the federal government, and how do you work the delivery, and what are the issues that the private sector has in making that delivery what the government needs. Tremendous number of things learned out there that do in fact change my attitude and my understanding of what's the best way to work with our vendors, both in terms of negotiating for the taxpayer and in terms of being a good partner.
Right. Well, with that in mind, now let's talk about your new gig as with GSA as a director of the Office of Strategic Programs at ITS. And, you know, what is your portfolio? What does that Strategic Programs Office sort of do?
Well, it's got two pieces called the Center for Strategic Solutions. And that Center for Strategic Solutions comprises USA Access, Smart Buy Program, the Cloud Infrastructure and Emails of Service contracts, the Federal PKI Bridge, and other new innovative ideas that might be of interest to our customers. The other half of the office is the Center for Government-Wide Contracts, and that includes things like Alliant Small Business, VETS, and 8A Stars.
Okay. So, and were there any surprises when you got there, or things that said, I didn't realize GSA did that, or I really didn't realize GSA did that kind of thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting. GSA had done I've been a customer of GSA for many, many years. And so I had one perspective as a customer. And just like going to the private sector had its interesting learning moments, going to GSA and seeing it from the other side had some interesting moments where I said, you do a wonderful job of giving the customer that single face. Of course, inside, it's more complicated than that. And you have to learn all the pieces and have to learn how things fit together. And that's an interesting challenge.
Sure. Well, you know, with regard to that office, have now that you've been in place for a year, are you, you know, put your stamp on it? Or what is your vision for the organization moving forward?
Well, there's a couple of things that we are doing to change the office. And the office really had never been managed as an office previously. It had always been managed as two centers. So first thing I started to do was ask, what are the synergies between the pieces? And how do we do solutions for the customer rather than focusing simply on providing contracts to our customers? I'll give you an example. One center had the infrastructure and emails of service contracts, cloud-oriented. The other side of the center had the Alliant program, which provides many cloud solutions.
Sure.
Well, which way should a customer come, and which contract should they use? We each was selling their own piece. My focus is, how do we help customers pick the right contract to meet the need they're trying to meet, and how do we offer that in a more solutions-oriented way? And how do we integrate these things so that we don't care which one we sell, we care that we get it right for the customer.
Well, I know within GSA, you can get a little parochial in terms of, you know, that competition. So what did you do to sort of try to push folks to think about it in that as a solution set as opposed to, you know, I got my program to sell versus somebody else's?
Well, of course, there are a lot of things that you do. One of the things that's happened very recently is I have appointed someone to be our customer engagement lead, and that's Larry Hale. Larry, in fact, was the center director for the Strategic Solutions Center. And Larry's done a great job in that center director role, and now I've asked him to step up, working across the office, really bring together to two pieces of the office. And we're looking at things like, how do we incentivize the behavior? How do we give credit for people when they sell the other person's contract? How do we, in fact, understand the contracts in terms of the needs of the customer? Do we understand why they would pick one or the other? And so we've tried to lay that out and be much more thoughtful about why different contracts work different ways and why they have values to customers with different circumstances.
Well, you know, with that in mind, you know, our you know, I think one of the things I think we do want to talk about a little bit is, you know, what are your customers telling you that they need? What are, you know, sounds like you guys are really in a listening mode to try to find those right solutions. So what are you hearing from your customers? What are they interested in with regard to your services or your solutions, excuse me?
Well, I think, you know, if you think about where the customers are today, obviously we've got this very large fiscal situation in the federal government. And so, of course, customers are very interested in savings. Customers are also interested in speed. They need to move quickly to get those savings. It's no good to say, this is a great vehicle, we'll save you lots of money, but it'll take you 3 years to get on that vehicle. So we're also focused on acquisition speed. That's something that GSA brings to the table that I always appreciated as a customer. Great reliability. Our customers are very interested in, how do I bring innovation to the game quickly? And this is very difficult. Everyone knows the challenges of writing a full and open competition. Everybody knows the challenges of protest and delay. And so something we're trying to do is say, how do we get as many cloud services with good savings available to customers as quickly as possible? And that's why we've done things like exploring the cloud broker concept, exploring other ways of doing things so that we can provide that value quickly to the customer.
Sure. And Mark, right now we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with Mark Day. Mark is the director of the Office of Strategic Programs, and we'll talk a little bit more about what customers are looking for and how GSA is, and particularly Mark's office, is responding. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mark Day. Mark is the director of the Office of Strategic Programs at the Integrated Technology Service in the General Services Administration. And Mark, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about, your customers and what they're telling you with regard to savings and, what their needs are and providing those solutions. And that's one thing I wanted to pick up on is the idea of savings and what they're with the budget these days. Are folks really coming to you? How are they coming to you? Say, how can you save us money? I know time is money, but in terms of solutions, what are they looking for?
Well, obviously, every customer would like to get a great price. And so there's no surprise there, and we do work on that.
We all would like to get a great price for whatever we're buying, right?
Exactly. Right. I shop for the same thing myself. On the other hand, great price is not always the only part of the equation. There is total cost of ownership. How do we, in fact, write a contract that provides the right terms and conditions for the vehicle? How do we, in fact, empower the customer to be a smarter customer through the kinds of terms and conditions that exist on the contract? And then finally, what's value? Frankly, many times, value is in how does it help drive some other business process of the agency to be more efficient. So we can spend money on IT and displace an even larger amount of money in some other area. And so it's not just the cost of the information technology, but it's the total cost of that business process that we're focused on.
Yeah, and in the cost area or in the value area, I think you make a great point. I mean, there's got to value and costs. Ultimately, it seems and I hear this all the time about low cost, technically acceptable, and the concern there that in the long run, maybe the government's going to shoot itself in the foot when value turns into more efficient and effective and better quality. But I know that there have been a series of reports recently about solving problems and saving money through information technology. And I guess my question to you as someone who's now in the business of trying to meet customer needs and connecting the private sector to your customers through your markets and your frameworks, and someone who's been a customer and been in the private sector, is a government, is it doing a better job using technology than it has been, and where are there opportunities for savings?
Well, I think that in truth, the government is doing a better job. We are getting smarter about this. This is a profession that's not that many years old, if you really think about the IT profession. So there's a lot of maturing continuing to go on. And think back, it's not that many years ago that Klinger-Cohen was the new thing. CIOs were right. New to the game. And so there's a lot of maturing that has to occur. That said, there's obviously lots more we can do. So I'd give you a couple of examples. Probably the hottest new area is how do we use big data techniques to actually understand our data, look for things like fraud, look for waste. How do we use data to pinpoint decisions that we need to make smarter? There's a lot of opportunity there. A dollar spent in IT in driving big data can save $10, $20, $30 on the other side. Didn't reduce your IT cost, but it brought your total
savings
cost down.
Right. So in that regard, do you guys, when you do one of these solutions for folks, are you, putting in parameters or measures of how you sort of account for the savings, both in terms of, do you measure the time it takes to put something in place and then, sort of follow up about what the system does in terms of savings, right, across the board?
Well, we do a lot of things. First, we do, in fact, look at time of acquisition. Because any solution that's delayed is a savings that's not occurring or a mission that's not being delivered as efficiently as possible. It also reduces acquisition cost. Many of the acquisition community are, frankly, quite busy. Agencies get backlogged in their own acquisition process. And so how do we bring the cost of acquisition down for the government as a whole?
Right.
Using our vehicles.
And with that, let's talk about some of those vehicles. And just can you just sort of give us a we'll start with the GWACs and where they are right now and, you know, the ones you have. I know you mentioned Alliant. I know there's several other ones. And, you know, what are you seeing in terms of customer use and volume through those contracts?
Well, the volume continues to grow in all of those contracts. We had a banner year this year. Alliant, let me just give you a couple of examples. People think of Alliant as a contract that was written 5 years ago. What can it do? Can it be used for the cloud? Well, the contract was written that allows the entire scope of the federal enterprise architecture. So if it fits in within the federal enterprise architecture, you can do it under Alliant. Doesn't matter if it's new technology or old technology. For example, we have $275 million in sales for cloud in the Alliant contract this year. That is a substantial increase from 2 years ago. We were $11 million.
Oh, wow.
A couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. We're 275 now.
Well, didn't GSA do its cloud through Alliant? Or
yes, it did. Its cloud email is delivered through the Alliant contract. One of the great first examples, that was actually done last year. And so it's a great example. And I think you asked the question, are we getting better? Many agencies used last year to look at and follow the success of the pioneers, like Casey Coleman, who used Alliant for her Gmail solution. Today, we're starting to see those orders come in. That's why we have $275 million, most at the end of the year.
Wow.
People are beginning to make the adoption. They're seeing the proof. They're getting comfortable with the ideas, and they're moving forward.
So I guess is it fair to say that the Alliant, when you talk about the, you know, the IT framework, you know, it's almost like an evolving scope of work on that contract?
Well, the scope, to be technically correct so I don't get in trouble with the lawyers, the scope is...
Well, you never want to get in trouble with those lawyers, I know.
The federal enterprise architecture is the scope.
Right.
But the actual technology that's delivered underneath that scope...
Changes, can change. That evolves.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay, so yeah, I get it. So it's like it's an overall umbrella. Here's the framework that is the scope. And that's almost like it's performance-based in the sense is what are the technologies that get you to where you need to be.
Exactly.
Okay,
and
I got it.
Agencies can be very creative under the Alliant contract. There's almost no technology they can't actually get under that vehicle.
And some of the other, I know most of the other GWACs that GSA has are focused on small business. Is that correct?
The rest of our portfolio today is, in fact, on some social group, small business. The Alliant small business contract has the same scope. And so you can do the same thing there, only with small business. 8A Stars is focused on the 8A community, so somewhat smaller companies, more specialized work. All of these are on our website, so you can actually look up the scope and you can look up who the contractors are. And then there's the vets contract, which helps the veteran community by helping us use their services through the contracts. And a number of veteran companies bring a lot of new ideas to the table. And, you know, it's a good way to pay back our veterans as well.
Absolutely. Hey, and turn a little bit back to the other part of your portfolio, Smart Buy.
Yes.
You know, what's going on at Smart Buy? I think I read some headlines there about, you know, GSA partnering with an agency to try to jumpstart Smart Buy or something like that. Is that correct, or am I getting the headline wrong?
No, you're getting the headline just exactly right. We released a request for information around the idea of large publishers and how do we, in fact, do a better job of buying as a federal government with our large publisher partners. The Smart Buy program is evolving. We're talking about Smart Buy 2.0. And really what that is an evolution that says we're going to come with anchor tenants to the conversation rather than a theoretical market in which we ask vendors to provide us their best price, but there's no committed volume. We're trying to bring a number of agencies to the table and actually have some committed volume so that the vendor has an assurance that their time and effort spent on this contract actually has value to them.
Right. You know, hey, Mark, and right there, you are preaching to the choir right here in terms of it's, you know, that's a basic blocking, tackling, getting back to the fundamentals. And if you have, you know, committed customers and quantities that you that a vendor knows are at the table are going to be and going to be bought, and there's real purchases to be made, you are going to get better pricing. Absolutely. Yes. And better competition. So. Yes. And speaking of that, I do have to take a break right now. But when I come back, we'll be talking more with Mark Day, the director of the Office of Strategic Programs at ITS GSA. And when we come back, we'll continue. We'll talk a little bit more about Smart Buy and also the federal strategic sourcing initiatives that ITS is working on. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mark Day. Mark is the director of the Office of Strategic Programs at the Integrated Technology Service in the Federal Acquisition Service and the General Services Administration. Mark, I know I promised I wasn't going to do that, but I couldn't resist one time going through all that litany. Hey, Mark, when we took a break, we were talking a little about you know, Smart Buy, and I understand Smart Buy is considered a federal strategic sourcing initiative. And from that perspective, what role is your office playing in that area? You know, I know you're doing other things a little bit beyond Smart Buy, but I want to keep talking about Smart Buy. But are there other things that are going on there as well?
Well, there are a lot of things going on in the Integrated Technology Service, wireless and other kinds of initiatives. Smart Buy is my particular piece of FSSI, which is hard to say. And there are a couple of ideas that are very different there. One is quite a bit of research and understanding this marketplace. We have industry partners who have a very large part of the market, and we have industry partners where it's a very competitive market. The way we approach them obviously has to be a little bit different. The way we bring committed volume to the table differs, and the importance of it differs as a result. With the anchor tenant idea, what we're trying to do is have a wide selection of different agencies who have different needs come to agreement on one set of terms and conditions so that when we go to the vendor, we really can talk about a federal approach to the buy. A federal approach that will appeal to many different agencies, proof of which is the fact that we have agencies with different needs at the table, all in collaboration with us. And then for our customers, the promise is really very simple. We're not going to do a deal unless our customers are satisfied it's a good deal. We're not asking them to commit to a bad deal. We're asking them to be part of the conversation, make sure the deal really meets their needs. And if we do the deal, it's a deal that met their needs, and therefore they're comfortable being committed to that solution.
So, yeah, and that's really interesting. And one of the things I wanted to follow up on there is, you know, the idea of trying to come up with a common set of either terms and conditions or requirements. So that must involve negotiations across the agencies. How does that work? Does GSA sort of the arbiter, or are you the facilitator? How does that work?
Well, to be technically correct, probably both. we facilitate first. For example, one of the projects we're working on right now, 18 agencies came together. They represented just over 80% of the purchasing power for that particular software. And over a period of almost a year, hammered out what are the things that are most important to the agencies and that are reasonable expectations of the vendor. Obviously, we have to make this a deal that both sides want to sign. So we do understand it's a deal. It's not a dictate.
Right.
And so we worked with the 18 agencies. Then four stepped forward and said, we want to be the anchors for this game. There are two other agencies, by the way, talking to us about joining. Be wonderful to have them. And then we sit down and really work through what makes sense, what can we do as an acquisition thing. So we facilitate, we convene, we facilitate, and at the end of the day, then we do a little arbitration of, is this something we can put in acquisition language? And we work with our customers on that so that they're very comfortable that we've made a sound decision.
Sure. And it must be a pretty, you know, I want to say it's easy to do. It could be like chasing cats. That's my commentary, not yours. So folks out there listening. But it must be, you know, seriously, though, the issue of setting those requirements must be, you know, because you don't want to set them too low to try to, you know, get, yeah, because otherwise they're not going to meet what people's needs are and people may opt out. That right. must be a real tough sort of process.
Well, this is where things like request for information, market research, and other things come into the game. We have to understand what the customer's looking for. We also have to sit down with the vendors in that community and understand what the art of the possible would be for them. What are their concerns? What kinds of problems do they have in making a good sale to the government? Maybe we're asking for things that, frankly, have very minimal value to us, but pose serious problems for them in their delivery.
Right, or increase their costs. Like, exactly. One of the things that's always good to ask from our perspective is what are requirements you're adding as a government agency that add no real value to performance but increase the cost to the companies?
Right.
So, I mean, and I hope that's kind of what you're thinking about.
And so I would never say adds no value, but
right.
very minimal value
it's,
sometimes.
Yeah, it's a balancing act, right? What's the cost-benefit analysis
yes,
there?
It is a balancing act. And it's also sometimes the art of how we ask for it. Sometimes we're asking for something in a difficult-to-respond manner, when a slight change in the wording or the slight change in what we're asking for is very easy for industry to respond to. And I'll give you just one example that's very clear. In a previous life at EPA, we had a requirement that they report on a monthly basis so we could get our finances. We interpreted that to be the exact last day of every month. Private industry standard was we did X number of days to make a quarter. Yes, the quarter won't always end on the last day of the month. It's a set number of days, but at the end of the year, it always balances out.
Right.
We forced into the month,
mm-hmm.
major cost in their accounting system, major
sure.
change, yet a very slight difference. We would have gotten what we wanted,
but either,
we
yeah.
would have kept the cost down.
Right, for them, yeah. They wouldn't have to adjust to a unique government requirement.
Exactly.
Or perception that it was a unique government requirement.
Exactly. And so it really comes down to understand the requirement in its intent and its purpose, not the expression of the requirement that we happen to latch on to at day one. Understand what we're really trying right. to get to, and that's where market research, both with the customer and with the vendor, really makes a difference.
Right, and the idea of using, getting that feedback and engaging industry through RFIs and that sort of thing, I think is a very good, it's a sound practice, and you get more value for your customer and a better outcome for everybody that
Absolutely.
Way. So, one of the other things I wanted to ask, well, getting back to that RFI, so, and you have RFIs out there now for
yes.
for the software publishers?
We have for software publishers, particularly large publishers, and we also have one out in the area of cloud brokerage and different thoughts about that very complex topic.
Yeah, well, I want to get to that in a minute, but let's start by getting back to the cloud a little bit, and just generally, and you mentioned that Alliant has seen huge growth up to $275 million in, you know, obligations there moving forward from $11 million like a year ago or so when GSA did its thing. So from your perspective, what are you seeing as biggest challenges for people moving to the cloud or adopting the cloud?
So there are three big challenges that we see every day. And I'm sure customers have their own unique set of challenges in addition. But the three are, well, we all know about security.
Yep.
And we know where FedRAMP is taking us to try to resolve that set of problems. So I'm going to let that one set to the side for a moment. There's a huge learning curve that has occurred there, but I think it is occurring and there's real promise there. Second big issue is most agencies need to integrate whatever they buy with a cloud service needs to integrate with some legacy part of the organization. And how do they do that successfully? Now, this is why I believe Alliant has taken off. It provides the integration service as well as the cloud service. And so an agency can tailor exactly what they need in terms of both getting the cloud service, and then how do I integrate that with the existing infrastructure so that my system continues to run seamlessly across the totality of my infrastructure? That's a very tricky question and very difficult question at times. The other contracts, infrastructure as a service, emails as a service, are more niche contracts. They say, if you know what you need and you have your own integration capability, here's a very fast, pure play cloud option.
Sure.
Go get that fast, pure play cloud option, but you'll have to do the integration more on your own.
Sure, sure. So, you know, with that in mind, actually, we're coming up on a break. So I can think about my next question while we take our break. But I want to say you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Mark Day, and when we come back, we'll talk about cloud brokerage. I have a follow-up question on Smart Buy, just real quick, and we'll be right back.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Mark Day. Mark is the director for the Office of Strategic Programs at the Integrated Technology Service and General Services Administration. And Mark, when we last segment, we started to talk about cloud brokerage and what was going on there. But I had a couple quick questions to finish up. You know, with regard to Smart Buy, are you looking at using the schedules to continue? Like most of the Smart Buy vehicles are done through BPAs off the GSA schedules. Are you looking at how you're going to do that or seeking input on that?
Well, that's one of the many questions the RFI looks at. The reason we go out with a request for information is really to give industry a chance to tell us the things that they see that we could do better. And one of the questions, obviously, is a BPA the right contract vehicle? Blanket purchase agreements have their place. They can be very powerful. But that doesn't mean they're the only answer. And it doesn't mean they're always the right answer. So we're giving industry a chance to tell us what they think is the right answer and how they would improve the process if they were king for a day.
Sure. That's very useful and helpful, I think, for folks to think about that aspect of that acquisition vehicle. And then turning back to, we were talking about cloud and we started a little bit, maybe mentioned that word brokerage. But you talked about, the three key issues, security, legacy, and I think you're going to get to the third one.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Sure. That's acquisition. The speed of acquisition and the ability to introduce new technology is one of the really difficult parts of this process that we're experimenting with. It's only 2 years ago that we wrote our first cloud contract, and we learned some things from that, and the emails, the service contract improves that. And frankly, now we're looking at how do we improve substantially in new ways to improve the acquisition speed. And that's really why cloud brokerage is on the table.
Okay, so that's the big next question. As set me up for that. Like, what is cloud brokerage, or do we know, or is that what you're trying to find out?
Well, that's a great question, and I think it's on the minds of almost everybody who's responded to our request for information. First, let me say we had 1,700 pages of response. 73 vendors. Thank you very much.
Did you read all those pages, or have you yet? How about put it that way?
I have not yet read every page. I have staff who, in addition to their day job, have been reading all of this in their spare time and putting together a lot of common themes that come through. And as you might expect, different communities have different themes. One theme is, what is cloud brokerage? And people have very different understandings of that. If you were to go back to the academic answer, academics don't agree on what cloud brokerage is yet. And there are different models. Gartner, for example, has put out a paper talking about the different kinds of models that cloud brokerage can take. So we are starting at the very beginning with our request for information saying, how do people see this playing out in the federal government? There are private sector models, But which ones are right for the federal government?
Right. So what are those models, or what are the different flavors, I guess, of cloud brokerage?
Yeah, the different flavors. Some deal with a very highly independent broker who does not provide the service, but helps you pick the service, okay. helps you monitor the service, helps you ensure that service levels are being achieved, and that there is constant competition among the different providers. Other models focus on integrating your different cloud providers. Think about the problem that could arise. An agency has bought software as a service from 25 vendors.
Okay.
How do they integrate that? So some brokers are focused on, how do I build an integrated environment so single sign-on can still work? How do I help the agency consume from all these different cloud providers? So that's a very different model. Some vendors have focused on customizing the offerings. So brokers have come in different flavors. I think our research is suggesting that GSA should never give up its acquisition role. So that's a pretty obvious answer. We're not giving up our acquisition role.
Right, and that's an inherently governmental function.
You've got it. That's an inherently governmental function, and we're not about to change that. On the other hand, this effort of integration, well, we have system integrators today with legacy environments, and they exist for a reason. It's a very important need for the federal government, and the system integrators fill that need. It may well be that a cloud integrator is the next major thing that we need to have to help the federal government consume the cloud services from many different vendors.
Sure. So with the RFI and all this information, and you know, your dedicated staff who's staying up late nights and going over that stuff. So what are the next steps? I mean, do you have a vision forward of where you want to take it once you've mixed? You know, there's some decisions that need to be made first.
Sure. There's a number of steps here. The first step is, once we have that very good summary of what the different views are, which we're very close to now, we'll be talking to a number of the vendors who wrote in the more interesting comments, I might say. Those who gave us great promise in what they wrote, we may want to explore further. And so we'll be calling some of the vendors and asking them to come in and brief us in more detail. That will help us really understand what they wrote. We all know that you can read it and think you understood it.
Sure.
But maybe.
So it goes back to your end of the month example,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. You think you know. So we're going to do that. Second, the next step then is we probably, I'm not promising this, but probably we'll put together our understanding of what the industry told us and re-release an RFI that says, now that we've heard what you had to say at the very general level, here's a much clearer picture of what we're thinking about now. This is what we think you told us would make sense. Now I'll give you a chance to comment on that model. And then let's make a decision. Is there a real return on investment for the federal government to go forth with some kind of procurement? And what would that procurement look like? So it's really a three-step process. Internally, to pay for this, of course, obviously I have to use some resources.
Sure.
I've made a similar commitment to my management that at each stage of this process, we're going to ask ourselves, is this worth pursuing? So that we make good use of the money we have, and we actually are very thoughtful in making our decisions to go forward. This is not a done deal. We're going to go forward. We're going to do that if there's enough value.
Right. Value for your customers, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. So Mark, I understand you are a professor. You teach a class at George Mason University of IT and Systems Management. So, you know, in that regard, I want you to put on your professor's hat for a minute here and just sort of talk. You can talk theoretical or whatever. So, where do you see big picture IT going over the next, let's say, 4 years?
Well, IT, I think, is in a very broad sense, returning to its roots, which is it's all about the information. How are we using information to make better decisions? We've gotten, frankly, as a profession, and I have to own this, I've been a CIO for many, many years, we got focused on the technology, we got focused
gadgets, on right?
systems and gadgets, and isn't it sexy, and isn't it fun, and there was a lot of innovation going on in that field. But at the end of the day, this is all about delivering information to decision makers. And I don't care if that decision maker is the secretary of a department or some clerk processing a travel voucher. Do we deliver better information to enable people to do their job more efficiently? And that's really what this whole profession is about. And so one of my goals is to help us deliver vehicles to the federal government that really do allow our customers to focus on that in state by getting great services from our vendors that take some of these other issues off the table so they can focus on how am I helping my agency. And with that, I would say in this time of stress in our federal budget and our federal fiscal needs, the CIOs who are able to deliver at that, make better decisions, empower the people, will be heroes in their agency. And those CIOs who remain focused on simply cooler stuff may find it difficult to compete for the scarce dollars in the budget.
So that's when you talk about solutions.
Yes.
You're talking about delivering information better.
That's absolutely. At the end of the day, a solution is not a solution unless it helps people do their job better, faster, more efficiently.
Right. And another question I'm curious. Do you see, you know, lessons learned from the private sector or agencies who have done it well that you could point to?
Sure. There are a lot of agencies doing a lot of very good stuff, starting with GSA and its email effort. If you go back, and Casey Coleman's a great spokesman on this, and I would tell you to go to anything where she's speaking on it. That's how I learned
about it. So I need to have her on the show, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Before I joined GSA, I went and listened to what Casey had to say. And I was most impressed with, not only did she deliver the technology, but more importantly, she delivered the training experience. She delivered the culture change, the change management effort. She really built a complete package showing her customers, the employees of the agency,
sure,
exactly how to do it and how to use it.
Okay, and you know, I'll give you one last, putting on your professor's hat, and one last thought, or what, you know, if there's, over your time, you know, working in the private sector, public sector, what's the biggest, you know, fundamental change you've sort of seen in the procurement system that for the better?
In the procurement system for the better, well, it sure isn't the increase in protest.
Well, I could put my lawyer's hat on and say, well, what do you mean? But no, go ahead.
I think what we are starting to see is a willingness to really think, is the FAR constraining us from doing things we need to do, like good cloud procurement? Or can we, in fact, understand the FAR and step back and ask ourselves, is that just old habits? Is that just old precedent? And we really are starting to rethink that, and I think that's a very positive step.
Okay. Well, hey, Mark, it's great having you on the show. I want to thank my guest, Mark Day. Mark is the director of the Office of Strategic Programs at the Integrated Technology Service and the General Services Administration. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.